What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, we are hoping that you do not have to force yourself to stay awake while you listen to us, but if you do, we understand. It's okay. We'll do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me, as always, Brad Miller.
What's up?
And Mike Duranik.
Hey, good to be here.
I hope you guys don't quit after that cold open. I'm ashamed of it. It was bad. I felt like, honestly, though, I'm going to put it back on this movie. This movie did not give me anything to do a cold open with. So while I will admit that it was not good, I refuse to take any blame for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. We are doing Awakenings, Mike's pick for the month of January. Robert De Niro, Robin Williams, in this very dramatic movie. I guess I assumed, and Mike sold this to me. Do you remember how you said what this was?
I have no idea.
You said that Robin Williams was a cross between his character in Good Will Hunting and Patch Adams.
Okay, that sounds like something I would have said. That checks out.
I expected there to be a smile on my face at some point in this movie. I was sold a different bill of goods, but we will get into it. Before we get too much into it, I just want to ask you guys the question that I always do, and that is, what was your first experience with Awakenings? And I'm drawing a complete blank on what year this came out, but was it in the theaters when this film was released? Did you catch it later as a rental? Was this your first time seeing it? What was your first experience with Awakenings?
So let's see. This is being recorded on a Sunday, so my experience happened two nights ago on a Friday night in my home with a free stream of Awakenings.
Yeah, so the only time I had seen this prior to the rewatch for this podcast, and it sounds like I'm the only one who had watched it prior, it was assigned to me, and I cannot remember if it was in my undergrad or my graduate classes, but it was assigned, and we had to write a paper about something with the ethics of, you know, practice with clients and things like that. So I can't remember if it was undergrad psychology or if it was graduate school social work, but somewhere in college this movie was assigned to me, and I watched it, and this would be the second time for me.
Robin Williams already gave us the perfect ethical argument for how to deal with patients in Good Will Hunting when he said, screw them while they're vulnerable. I might be paraphrasing. That's pretty much what he gets at when he's teaching his class. Brad's looking at me. He doesn't remember. You don't remember that scene?
In which film?
Good Will Hunting. He walks in, he's teaching a class, and he says something about, he's talking about, like, being a therapist and that like that, and he said, remember, and that's the point, screw them while they're vulnerable, or something like that. He says that, I promise. I'm not inventing that.
He does not say screw them while they're vulnerable, but I don't know which line you're referring to. But anyways, yeah, I don't even know where to go from that.
I know I'm right. Well, I don't know. I know he said that.
We'll figure it out later.
Awakenings, though. Did you know anything about the movie, Brad, before you watched it?
No. I actually thought that this was going to be a scary film, and I thought that it had Jack Nicholson in it. I was very surprised to see Robin Williams when I pulled that up.
That's The Shining. Well, The Shining is what you were thinking of.
I don't know. I mean, I knew it wasn't The Shining, but for some reason I had Awakenings as some sort of thriller horror film in my mind or something.
There was a part of me that thought I was going to watch Insomnia. I did think that at one point before I hit play. I thought
I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea it had Robin Williams in it, and yes,
I also had not. I had not seen this movie, and clearly had no freaking clue what it was about. So Mike was the one that came in somewhat prepared for the rewatch.
Yay, January!
Yeah, fresh palette for us. So let's get into it.
Well, we had to go a ways back for this. This was 1990, right?
1990. I just did look it up.
32 years back. So
quite a ways back there. In the 90s. I mean, you're talking. Both of these guys, I mean, they've been around for a long time, but you're still talking peaks of powers in the 90s. I mean, these guys are at the top of their game. The top of their game just happened to last a very long time, over a few decades.
Yeah,
but
Robin Williams and Peter McAllister?
Yes, Peter McAllister did pop up in this. So did Josh Lyman. Mike's probably the only one that's going to understand that reference, but that's fine. West Wing. It's all right. You'll get there someday. But let me ask what I do. Mike is the defending champion of the game because I threw it last week pretty horrifically, thinking that that From Dusk Till Dawn would be a rotten film. It was not. So, Mike, it goes to you. Brad will have the chance to snipe you. What is the sitting Rotten Tomato score of, bless you, Awakenings?
Well, you know, we're going this far back. Obviously, none of us were around when this movie, well, a couple of us were born, but we weren't paying attention to movies. I have no idea if this movie was well-received or not. But, as you pointed out, they're both at their peak of their powers. So I suspect that it was fairly well-received by critics. And it feels to me like the kind of movie that in the late 80s, early 90s would have been pretty well thought of. So I'm going to go... What do you think, Brad? Do you think it hit the 90s? I'm going to go with an 80... I'm going to go with an 88 and let you decide if it's over or under.
Wow. Yeah, that's not too far from where I think I'd have it. I mean, I had no idea what to expect, and obviously didn't even know who was in it. So all of mine is based off of, what, 30 years later, 32 years later, seeing this film. But one of the points that you said, I think, that's going to push me to my number is that Robin Williams was in it in peak of his powers. So I think that it's probably pretty high. But, man, you gave me a tough number. I'm going to roll the dice, and I'm going to go above and say 89. But I don't feel good about it.
Well, this movie has the exact same score for the audience and the critics. So everyone was in agreement. Oh,
God. That doesn't bode well. Does not bode well.
This was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, no wins. De Niro got nominated for Lead Actor. It's screenplay and best picture, which did lead to the audience...
What? It's really?
Yeah, those 3 nominations. Which led to an audience and a critic score of 89%.
Oh, Brad pulling it out.
So Brad is the cheater this week, clearly, obviously, if you got it exactly correct.
That was close.
Only because he picked 88.
That's true.
I should have picked 89.
So an 89%. Nominated for 3 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, which it's strange that it was only nominated for those 3 things.
You said it was Best Picture, Best Actor, and
Writing.
And so screenplay?
But just, you know, that those are the 3 things. It's just, you'd think it might get a couple more. But those are it. So then the question that follows this is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Is this movie an 89%? And, I mean, I guess along with that, are you... surprised, or do you think it was worthy of the accolades that it received outside of Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to answer this twofold. Personally, no, I don't think they were correct, but I'm going to answer yes, I think they're correct in that it deserves to be that. I think it was a fine film. I enjoyed watching it. I'm glad I saw it once. I'm glad it gave me some things to think about. I'll probably never watch it again, and a little bit boring at times, but overall a decent, entertaining film. So yeah, I'll say in generality speaking, 89 is correct.
Yeah, I think kind of to piggyback on that, if I'm ranking it against where film has gone in the last 30 plus years, no, it's too slow, the pacing is too slow. People these days don't have that kind of attention span for a very slow developing plot line. But if I am, so, you know, I would say probably I'd put it low to mid-80s maybe. But when you put it up against other movies in that time period, I think that it's perfectly fine. You know, the 80s were kind of a very big wasteland, I think, with movies in general. And so this coming out of the 80s plays better, I think, in that time period, and upper 80s makes sense. And especially with it being nominated the way it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think just quality of the film, it's in the 80s. I don't think it's up there touching 90%, as close as it is. But in terms of my enjoyment, this movie's just depressing. And I don't, again, I have no idea what to expect when I hit play, but I figured with Robin Williams, I mean, he comes off as awkward and shy at the beginning of it, but I kind of expected Robin Williams to come out in that character, and he doesn't, and I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, I've seen him play more serious. I mean, Insomnia's, I made the joke about that. That's a whole different thing. He's supposed to be a bad guy in that. But I've never seen him actively not be funny for an entire film, or at least, like, warm my heart a little bit in any way. And that took a lot out of me watching this for 2 hours. So it's hard for me to say, like, that they're right, because... And I get that that was probably the point, but I just didn't have any amount of fun.
You didn't like when he finally was going to hook up with Marge Simpson?
No. Which took me forever. I spent that whole movie... I'm usually pretty good about pulling, like, where's this person from? And I don't... See, this proves, again, I don't cheat. I don't just instantly pull up IMDb. I sit there for as long as I can.
Oh, I didn't, and like, I didn't do that either. I heard the voice. I was like, oh,
that's Marge. No, I couldn't. I was looking at her face. I was like, where is she from? I can't think of it. I don't know what it could be.
To my credit, I watch a lot of Masked Singer. So, like,
okay.
Essentially, I was just listening to the voice and was able to pick it out.
But, yeah, so then it finally did appear.
I have one fundamental issue with the film. Only one place where it messed up for me. Is this the part to put it
go
in?
For
or
it,
are we
going to
come back around to this?
No, go for it.
I think De Niro nailed 99.9% of this character that he was playing, but one thing that they did, and I can't get past it, is when he was going back towards his catatonic state, I guess is the way to put it, he's getting angry with Robin Williams, and at one point says to him, no, you're lonely, you're depressed, you're this, you're that, I forget exactly the words he says, and essentially, like, you're the one that's unhappy, and then he pushes him. And, like, essentially, this is a child locked in now a man's body,
right,
who doesn't, at least to the way the film shows it, doesn't really have that type of interaction with this character to be able to articulate mental and emotional issues that this person might be having, as far as how does he know the things that he mentioned there. I think they just were a little too on the nose with De Niro's idea to kind of pick apart this person's issues. Like, there are people that are well-versed in this stuff that wouldn't be able to articulate that, right, let alone a child who's essentially been locked in there. And maybe I'm missing the part, is that his brain was fully functioning and he was well-read and he understood these things, and maybe he could look at a person and kind of diagnose their social status and social issues and things. But to me, that's just one thing that stood out. I was like, man, that, I don't think that he'd be able to articulate the issues that he sees in Robin Williams' character. But outside of that one line that he delivered, his performance was amazing.
I guess my biggest question when the movie got done was just, I was really curious why they made it, because I assumed going through that, you know, when we get to the every movie based on a true story has the title cards at the end of, like, what happened next, I was waiting for, you know, Dr. Malcolm Sayer eventually created this drug that you all know now as this and this, and it's led to all these break, like,
well, I think if I have to answer that question, Mike's kind of alluded to that earlier, where he was assigned this in a class to try to discern whether or not what this guy was doing was ethical or not. He was essentially working on humans as
test subjects,
yeah. You know, and I think that that's probably why this film was made, is because that was probably around the time in society where we're really starting to look back in the past of medical practices that were good or bad, and that was a pretty big deal of what they were doing. So I think it was, let's highlight this and let's make a film about it. Now, to make a film about that gets nominated for all the stuff it got nominated for, now that's the part that blows my mind, because this is kind of a niche audience that would really be into this, but I guess going with Robin Williams at this time, that's where you make it a,
it's just, I want to hear your opinion on that question too, Mike, but to me it's, you, like, we did Prisoners on this show. I love that movie. That's one of the best movies I think that's been made in the last decade. It's depressing. It's very hard to watch. But they do it in such a way, like, Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman are magnetic in that movie. Like, you can't look away. even with all the terrible things that are happening on screen, and there's things going on because you want to see how the chase ends and like, will they save this girl, things like that. So even though it's a depressing, hard to watch movie, there's things that bring you back to that. Like, I just kept getting my heart broken in this movie. It tore me apart when he's trying to go for his walk and all those orderlies tackle him. Like, that was, I don't know why that got to me the way that it did, but that was really hard to watch. And there was no, like, bounce back. There was no, like, well, we went through this, but here's this thing now. And not that everything has to be all wrapped up with a nice little bow thing. I'm not saying that. But, again, I just kept asking, like, why? Why are you telling me this sad story with the happiness is that he got a date at the end?
Well, I think the fundamental question there is, does media, the cinema, owe us a happy story every time? Like, and is that the purpose of it? Or at the end of the day, you know, to me, that's what makes this movie compelling, is that you see this man who, you know, became catatonic and was living inside of his body, but, you know, couldn't act, couldn't do anything, regain his function, regain his ability. You see the joy in life of him being able to go out and see things like airplanes, that, you know, you see him re-engage the world. You see the hope of the miracle of modern medicine and the potential of, you know, curing this thing, and then you see it all taken away from him. But I think in that moment that you mentioned particularly, as he's trying to go out for a walk, he's trying to leave, you see that in spite of the fact that he is who he is, right? He now has the ability to go walk out the door for that moment. They didn't know that it was about to all fall apart to that degree. He's still institutionalized. He's not able to walk out and leave. And so I think that that's where the morals and the ethics come in. But that is, I think, you know, why the movie? Well, probably because it asked those questions. Probably because somebody read the book and said, well, we can adapt this to a screenplay, right? Which is why any movie? Yeah. There's an idea and they're like, hey, we think we can make some money. You know, to the best picture, so that year was the year Dances with Wolves won. So just to kind of put this in your period of time, your other nominees that year were Ghost, The Godfather Part 3.
So it was a rough year.
And then Goodfellas.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would probably watch Goodfellas and maybe Dances with Wolves and maybe Godfather Part 3 over this. But, I mean, if Ghost is nominated this year, to say that this didn't deserve a seat at the table, well, it probably did.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess, I don't think Hollywood is required to give us happy endings all the time. Not at all. I guess this one just doesn't resonate enough with me to want to go back. It's something like I always think of The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Did you guys ever watch that one when it got popular?
Mm-mm.
Fantastically made movie. And everybody lauded after it. It was a big thing for, like, teachers when I was growing. Like, teachers had to show this movie because it was so good. And it was about the history and all this stuff. But it's, and if you've never heard of it, like, it's about a son of a Nazi captain who befriends a Jewish boy in a camp.
Why am I? Concentration.
Concentration camp, thank you. And on and on and on. Spoiler alert for a movie that's 15 years old. He ends up befriending him so much that he keeps sneaking into the concentration camp to play with him. And at the end of the movie, he gets guided into a gas chamber with a little boy and he dies. Sure. Did that happen? Maybe it did. I don't know. Did I need to see that movie? No. Did I need to watch 2 hours of that and then watch this? I'm well aware of how horrifying World War II was, right? So that's one I'll never go back and watch again. I'll probably never watch this again just because there's nothing about it that pulls me back into, like, this is, you know, like, 12 Years a Slave is a movie that's so hard to watch. Someone might be able to convince me to watch that a second time because it's so good, but there's also so many, like, magnetic performances in it that I might be willing to sit through that a second time. But you just kind of have these movies that are like, yes, it's well made. Yes, the performances are great. De Niro, I could get behind him getting nominated for Best Actor. There's some moving stuff that he does, but there's nothing that's going to bring me back for round two of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if January wasn't such a weak month, I don't know that I would have ever come back to round two of the movie. Yes. So I agree with you on that. I think it's a well-done movie. That doesn't mean that it's entertaining in the sense of it's not a movie I'm going to come back to time and time again. And I think, yeah, to your point, Brad, it is the discussion about the ethics of it all. And, you know, on the flip side, you don't know. They didn't think that it was possible for these people to ever wake up, right? And so I think that the debate is, was it ethical to give this to them? And then, you know, obviously they didn't know it was going to fail in the long run. But, you know, they even say the line in there to give life but then have to take it away. I think that's what makes this movie interesting. But again, I think you also have to understand it in the period of time of 1990.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, too, that they were also trying to put enough in there to make you ask, like, you know, there was a lot of stuff in there about human contact and the effect that that has on these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they were trying to take it one more step, because that dance that she does with him, where mm-hmm. his body's essentially shaking nonstop at that point, and he stops shaking when she's holding him. And you know what they were trying to say or ask there, I don't know, because they didn't go deeper into that. But then even when, until she gets on the bus, like he shakes walking over to the window, and then he sees her walking to the bus, and he's not shaking at that point from what I could tell. And then she gets on the bus and he's shaking again. Like, clearly I don't know that human touch would have that effect in that moment that drastically. So clearly I think they were trying to prove a point there or ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that they would have got into that a little bit more, because that would play on the morals and ethics of that. But,
well, I think that they did a little bit, though, with the clear differentiation of how the staff of the hospital treated the clients differently after the awakenings than they did prior to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the other part of this, is seeing the person in front of you as a human being who is worthy of care, who is worthy of empathy, who is worthy of human touch, as opposed to just a job or just, you know, another person to ignore. And I think that that's where they kind of wrapped that back up, was there in the end, about how different the staff were approaching these people who they had now come to see as human beings, as opposed to, you know, just individuals who are catatonic and had no being.
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't think there's anything better I could add to
that. Also makes you wonder, too, like, if this were about death and resurrection, and if you could have a medicine that would basically bring back to life a dead relative, knowing that they alluded that that lasted a summer, it was that summer of 69 or whatever, you know, where would you fall on the, you know, is that something you'd be excited about? Like, would you bring that person back knowing that you're going to lose them all over again and have to relive that loss?
Right.
Or I guess you wouldn't know that at the time, but so we'd probably all sign up for, oh yeah, bring that person back. I'd love to have more time with them and, you know, go on a road trip or something with that person. But would you do that knowing that you're going to experience that loss again? Right. Like, would these families have signed up and okayed this medicine if they knew?
And I think that's what Marge Simpson was getting at, though, right, in this probably the most iconic performance by Marge. But when she said, you know, he was bemoaning giving life and taking it away, she's like, life is given to all of us and taken away from all of us. So,
right.
You know, it's just on different timescales.
Yeah, I agree. Because we've talked plenty before on both De Niro and Williams.
One more question on that, though. Where do we fall on the ethical side of this? We don't have to get into it, just maybe like a brief thought. But like, my first question is, like, what did these people expect if they hired a researcher to basically run this neuro department, you know? Mm-hmm. He went back to what he knows and what he does, and that was research. And obviously got positive results for a while there. So as far as, I don't know that I think that he was doing anything unethical, at least in his mind. However, looking back, there are clearly a lot of things that are probably, that wouldn't fly today.
More and more of a higher dose into people to see what happened.
The ethically murky area is probably how quickly they went from
a theory,
from testing it on one client where you had the mother's approval to do that, right, the guardian, to testing it on all of the clients. I think, and even there, you know, how long do you let this happen? But you know, this entire thing happens over the summer, so it feels like, you know, the ethically murky areas, how quickly they went from a test case to more broadly doing it. At the same time, I think the ethics on the other side are, you know, how ethically viable is it to be warehousing these individuals without seemingly trying in any way, shape, or form to come to understand their condition better, to try to treat them, or to treat them with care and you know, a caring approach while they're there. And so to me, the ethics are more murky on the way the hospital was running before hiring him than what he did. But I do think, in terms of his actions, the murkiness of the ethics are how quickly they broadened the study, so to speak.
I guess from the perspective of, like, if that was my family member and I had the say of what to do, I think I would give him, I think I'd sign the paper that the mom signed. Like, I wouldn't have, like, an issue with it. Like, their lives are nothing at that point as it is. Like, I would be accepting of trying some pretty crazy measures to get some more time, I think. Like, I don't really see a big issue with that. I think what you said, Mike, is right on, like, what they were doing before, calling them the garden or whatever. We just feed and water them. Like, I mean, you're just kind of babysitting people till they die. Like, at least he was willing to try something. So, favorite line, favorite scene. Let's do favorite scene.
I think, again, you referenced the most powerful scene to me was when he was trying to exit and get stopped and then drugged back. I think that is the emotional climax in a lot of ways of the movie, mm-hmm. because you see how even at this apex of his rebirth, his awakening, he still does not have rights and freedoms, right? He's a test subject. And
I'd have been on the side of those doctors. I would have said no as well, because I think that, like, again, you have essentially, you've taken this child and said, here's the world 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know. You haven't developed the skills to take care of yourself. You don't know what you're going to encounter. I can't let you walk around. If you want to go for a walk, sure, I'll trail behind you, but you're not going to go alone, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's just where, the second he wanted to go alone, it's like, well, no, essentially they're the parent. They're saying, no, the world is bigger than you know. It's not as safe as you think, and I'm going to protect you, you know? So I would have fallen on their side as well.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting, I guess, that they acted wrong. It's just that I think that was the most well-done scene and certainly pulled on the heartstrings the most.
The only thing that put some small amount of a smile on my face in the entire movie, if for any one scene, was when he was walking in the water, when he went out and rowing. It's like, you're not waiting, you're swimming. Like, mm-hmm. that was the only moment where I was like, well, this is nice. Like,
remember that scene.
It's when Robin Williams takes him on a walk through the city and he's seeing stuff. It's when he sees the airplane for the first time. He just takes him down to the beach.
He wants to wade, and then he ends up going, like, waist deep into the water. Well, Robin Williams is on
something
the,
about
the
like dock things have there. Changed since you were a kid. There's pollution now. I don't think this is safe.
That reminds me that there was a 2 or 3 minute stretch in the middle where I dozed off, and that must have been must have happened there, because I did not see that scene.
Did you have a different scene to throw on, or?
No, I enjoyed just watching them in that dance hall. You know,
they were
basically like, dude, you're boring. Let's go do something fun. And, you know. That was neat. That brought me a little bit of joy, just seeing that. And the lady that dyed her hair and her reaction to just kind of having some freedom was really neat. But yeah, I mean, that was clearly one you guys referenced was the most powerful scene. And I think it probably got to all of us as well, because we've all been on the other side of that, where we've had to take control of a situation to keep somebody safe. And it doesn't always feel good. It doesn't feel right. And sometimes you want to say, yeah, go do this. But sometimes you've got to take drastic measures to keep people from harming themselves when they don't see harm is there. So I'm sure that that scene affected all of us for that reason.
Yeah. Line? Any lines?
I do have a line. I had two that I liked that I made note of. But the one in particular, you said you didn't get too many laughs or smiles. There was one that killed me. So the first one I would say is just very simply Robin Williams' character, and I forget the entire context here, but just when he said, I'm sorry, if you were right, I would agree with you.
Yes. That's my favorite line as well.
Yep. That was a great one. But then the other one was in the job interview. I was rolling with that one, right? He's like, you know, immense project. I had to extract all this from 4 tons of earthworms. It's like, really? Like, yeah, I was on it for 5 years. I was the only one who believed in it. Everyone else said it couldn't be done. And they're like, it can't. He's like, I know that. I proved it. So that entire exchange there did make me laugh quite a bit. And maybe that was like the kind that there were snippets of that that made me think the way he delivered that was more like Good Will Hunting Robin Williams. I know it. I proved it. So there you go.
My favorite line is when Marge Simpson handed him the paper that said be more human or less scientific, and he turns to the crowd and he goes, knock, knock. He tells them to F themselves. Like, you know, that was definitely my favorite line in the film.
I think Brad's mixing movies.
Yeah, right? I think so. No,
was that right before or after Salma Hayek walked out?
Completely clothed.
Completely clothed.
Nothing
well,
happened.
She's a doctor.
Nothing that happened before or after she walked out. So
that is true. And like I said, I agree with Mike on mine. So I think that will wrap up our conversation of Awakenings. We've got one more movie left in the month of January. And it is Brad's choice for the month. It is The Founder, starring Michael Keaton. So we will wrap up the month next week with that. And other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.